whenever there's attention to something, you have the good actors and you also have the bad actors. You know, the bad actors.
I want to create solutions which help people.
Be this person I want to be in the future. I have to follow this path.
Seeing their lifestyle, you know, the type of lifestyle that I want.
Africa's Bank Ems. Paint your dreams. Dreams.
Welcome to today's episode. Today I'm joined by Lewis. Lewis is CEO of Maringo app, a social media which is making moves in the industry. How are you doing, Lewis?
Yeah, good afternoon, man. Yeah, it's nice. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me on this podcast today.
It's nice to have you, yeah. So, Lewis, can you just tell us about yourself? Who is Lewis besides being, you know, head of Maringo? Who is Lewis just as a person?
So, a little bit about myself, I guess. I like to consider myself like a tech, a massive technology enthusiast. I'm kind of diverse, like a bit of a jack of all trades when it comes to tech, you know, just my general personality, just to start. But I think one another passion I have is very passionate about the development of Africa, particularly the tech infrastructure, you know, a lot like not just pertaining to just, you know, the tech sector, but also like finance, energy, you know, like I'm a big advocate for. And this stems from my background and my upbringing. You know, I've spent a lot of time traveling all through Africa. So, you know, I'm very passionate about, you know, seeing Africa as a whole, you know, kind of develop and go through that kind of technological progression, so to speak.
I think we're on the same mission. Yeah, that's the same thing that drives this podcast, just getting people in Africa to see their true value. Can you tell us more about your background, how you grew up, where you grew up, how you went through life and stuff like that? Any challenges or how you overcame those challenges?
Yeah, so a little bit about myself. So I'm actually Nigerian by birth. So I was born in Nigeria. I lived there for about 10 years. Made my first move from Nigeria to Kenya. So my dad was in the United Nations, still is in the United Nations. So it made him travel countries quite a bit. So that was what led to me making the first move from Nigeria to Kenya. I stayed in Kenya for about 4 years, where I went to sort of like middle school. So about year seven, just up until like after year 10, after which I then moved again to South Africa and spent about 4 years there till I matriculated or graduated, finished high school, and then went to pursue my further education in England. So that's kind of, you know, like all my life, I would say I've kind of been on the move from one place to another. And like I mentioned previously, it's allowed me to see, you know, Africa from the different kind of perspectives. You know, these three countries I had the pleasure of growing up in, you know, are considered quite massive, large influences in the whole African continent. So that's kind of why I would say, like, I've adopted like a huge passion towards Africa as a whole. And I consider myself as a general citizen of Africa, and that really has rubbed and made form of my identity, shaped my identity.
Oh, that's really lovely. You know, traveling around Africa, most people dream of doing that. I've been around a small part of Africa, mostly the Southern African, I'm Zimbabwean, been to SA, also been to Botswana. So it's just something which is nice. So from you, like you said, your father is in the UN and then leads that to traveling a lot. How did that affect you, you know, in terms of building relationships? You know, maybe you're not traveling as much, but, you know, imagine 10 years in Nigeria, you have a lot of friends, then, oh, sorry, we have to relocate to Kenya, starting up again. Maybe you're now settling in Kenya. Oh, sorry, we have to move to South Africa now. How was that for you, like, in terms of you as a person and building relationships?
Prior to even moving, changing first from Nigeria to Kenya, you know, we changed schools quite a lot. So, you know, we changed, like, cities within Nigeria already. So I'll say I'm no stranger to kind of moving. So I'm the last of three, essentially. So I have two siblings, two other siblings. So like one brother and one sister. And I think it was quite interesting because right from a young age, we moved a lot. And that kind of meant, you know, changing schools, changing kind of cities. And particularly, like I mentioned, the first big move, it's a massive culture shock, you know, moving from Nigeria, like a West African kind of culture, to like now in the East African, very, very different. I feel when it first happened, you know, I became a bit more used to it. I think it was a bit shocking. But then over time, I think that really shaped a lot of I think a big part of my identity is being very adaptable. And it's not about, you know, some would say, in fact, my girlfriend would say that it's kind of rubbed me in a bad way, because I'm very, it's just, I don't like to deep dig my roots really deep because of that, you know, that fear of obviously having to move. But I think that what evolved from that was that it was a new form of friendships, a new style of friendship, because I went to international schools and all the kids in the schools kind of were of similar kind of, I'd say, situations where their families were also either diplomats or expatriates of some sorts. They also kind of had to move very frequently. So you'd be talking about, you know, they're no strangers to staying in short period, you know, like different regions for short periods of time. But that kind of, you know, that formed a good foundation friendship because, you know, a lot of the kids in the schools kind of had a similar kind of background. And even till this day, you know, I made really good friends, and like it's really beautiful because like I said, I'm currently based in the UK, but I have friends in London who you know used to go to school with me when I was in Nigeria. I have friends in school in London who kind of went to school with me in Kenya, and it's, you know, friends from South Africa who are now here in England. So it's that kind of everyone kind of travels and everyone kind of moves a lot, and so you end up kind of reconvening in very like interesting spaces. So I'll be traveling around the world and I'll find out that, oh, like, you know, it's very, very strange encounters because I'll come across a friend of mine that, you know, I went to school and, like, you know, how many years ago, who's currently in some random place in Europe or the like stuff. So I think it was different. I wouldn't say it was better or worse. I think it was a very different kind of experience. Personally, I think my brother and my sister kind of had their own different take on it. I think they didn't like it as much. They would have preferred maybe to kind of like have a stable base and not move around as much. But I kind of warmed up to the idea, and I think I got used to it because I think I was the youngest. So for me, I wasn't as old as them. So when we first moved, I think growing up, that was kind of my experience growing up. So I was a bit more used to it, so to speak.
The key word here from your whole entire conversation I got was adaptability. You had to learn to adapt to the situation. You might not have liked what was happening to you, but it was more like, okay, it has happened. What can we do? How can you make the best of the situation? And I feel like you turned out okay. Of course, yes, there are some remnants of saying maybe you do not want to like build deep roots, like you said. But anyway, it's something that if you feel it doesn't directly affect you and most people do not seem to be complaining about, I think you turned out just fine. Then on the topic, you said earlier that you're someone who's very tech savvy. We like doing things with tech. When did that introduction into tech happen to you?
I think actually from a very young age, probably right about when I was still in Nigeria. I think, funny enough, I got really into cartoons and that kind of that whole sci-fi genre, and that really kind of stimulated my brain to, you know, to, I remember watching the first Iron Man and really thinking this was pretty cool. So I think ever since I could imagine, I always wanted to be an engineer. And so, you know, like I said, that's kind of always been aligned towards more tech, you know, the tech side of things. I always like to build things, you know, like as I'm sure my dad and my family will kind of tell you this, like the negative side of that was that I used to break a lot of things in the house, partially because I wanted to understand how things work and, you know, try and, you know, dismantle things and then put it back together. I mean, I didn't always succeed with putting it back together. So I always ended up with kind of breaking things, and you know, more than not, that ended up not going very well. I think as far as I can remember, I think I've always been more technically inclined, and wanted to go down that route. I think when we first got our first kind of PC in the house, like our first computer, I was definitely kind of the one that really spent loads of hours on it, you know, trying to figure out this new gadget, because this, you're talking about like maybe 2006, 2007. So like sometime, like, you know, quite far back actually. So, you know, and, you know, if you, for those that were probably, you know, Africa, you know, for the kind of upbringing I was, that was quite a big, it was quite a big deal at the time, you know, in Africa, having like a laptop or like a home PC. So I really kind of, I started playing around with it, seeing, you know, the possibilities that came with this new technology. And I think that really shaped and influenced, you know, this path that I am on now, to try and understand, you know, like this digital tech, you know, web technical world a lot more, as well as the actual physical, you know, gadget tech side of things as well.
Lovely. I like how you got into it, especially like you said, from a young age. I can also relate to that, especially in the situation of, you know, dismantling things, saying, okay, if I dismantle it, there's a chance I'll be able to bring it back. Then you see that bring it back is is hard. I think that's something we can use that transition into the main topic. Like, creating is hard. Let's be honest. We can be honest. Yeah. The creating is very hard. Dismantling something, like you said, is very easy. Breaking something apart is very easy. But assembling it or creating it is very difficult. So we have the situation where we have Maringo. Maringo is the social media. And we live in an age where people, connectivity is more important than anything else. Everyone wants to connect. Like you said, you grew up in a time you're moving a lot, and back then maybe technology was not as strong as it was. Connecting was very difficult. So for you, can you explain to us, what is Maringo? What is its goal, and what is the purpose of it?
So I think, like you said, so Maringo is kind of the birth child of, I'll say, what I felt based on my experiences in terms of growing up. You know, I think, like you mentioned, connectivity and connections were very big, and even keeping in touch with, you know, your loved ones. I think when I was first, when I was in Kenya, I was sent to boarding school, and you know, my parents weren't there, and so the only way I could connect with them, even when I first moved away from Nigeria, a lot of my friends in Nigeria, you know, that was the first access of actually me utilizing these kind of social media platforms to really keep in touch. You know, particularly when you're traveling a lot and moving from one place to another, you realize that you start to recognize the benefits and value of having these social media networks. Because, you know, in the past, you know, if you're talking about like in the 90s, you know, they didn't have like social media platforms, so they either used to have to write letters or, like, you know, make phone calls, which were really costly at the time. So I think with the birth of social media, the social media age, it allowed for that connection to be made easier. Which, you know, particularly at the time when I was growing up and really making all this, you know, moves and all this traveling a lot, I think that was one of the big things that kind of made me stay in touch with a lot of my friends and really connect with people on a more international level. But, you know, as social media kind of grew and grew over time, for what it was when it first started, I felt it was a brilliant tool for the people, by the people kind of thing. But now it's kind of transitioned a little bit more into now this kind of corporate entity, which, you know, like this multinational, this massive tech giant, are kind of utilizing it as a tool to, you know, to spread, you know, different kind of narratives, you know, selling. You're basically selling attention to the highest bidder, which I think now it's not being used as it can be weaponized, you know, for those. It can be used as a bad weapon for, you know, against the masses, by those who have, you know, is willing to pay the highest buck, essentially. And like you talk about the concept of, you know, like farming people's kind of personal data and everything, you know, because, you know, this, you talk about these massive tech companies that have access to so much people's data and everything, and what are they actually doing with that, you know, making loads of money from that and actually not utilizing it for, you know, often good means. So I started to notice this from, I'll say, probably around 5-6 years ago. And particularly, I think that aligning that with my own passion, as I mentioned, for Africa, I felt that, like, it felt right to kind of, you know, like, to not only build like a social media platform that, you know, Africa could consider as its own, like having, you know, like a base, but also like changing the narrative a bit, you know, like, with my sort of experience of in the web, you know, I'm sure you kind of heard of this whole concept of Web3 and making it more democratizing it for the users, as opposed to, like, you know, moving away from these kind of heavily centralized, biased governance sort of platforms to now, you know, like platforms which users actually have more stake, more control, more say over, more ownership over their experiences. So combining all these different things together was what formed the basis and the foundation of the idea to really go up behind and build Maringo to what it was. So I think that's kind of what birthed Maringo. But funny enough, actually, in humbler beginnings of Maringo, it was actually meant to be. It started off as like a platform for, you know, for showcasing and selling African art. You know, that's actually one of the funnier histories of Maringo. Initially the idea started off as like, I'm a big fan of art. Particularly, like, you know, like I mentioned, as I travel a lot, it was one of the things that I really became like a massive enthusiast for, and seeing all the different style of art, you know the different artists that, you know, that were around Africa, and different style they used, and I also often felt like their work was, you know, often undervalued, underappreciated, because they weren't kind of given like the medium to kind of showcase their art, to really make a career, like a serious career from this art. And I really felt it was kind of brilliant stuff they did. So initially, I wanted to create a platform that that would be able to give this artist a medium to kind of sell that on an international scale, to kind of get the attention, get the funding they need to actually, you know, pursue artistry as like an actual career. But obviously, since then, it's kind of evolved and shaped into this much bigger entity to now being a social fire platform that it is today. So yeah, so that's kind of like a brief, you know, like a sort of long-winded brief explanation of Moringo and how it came to be, to be very honest with you.
I think that is very good that you went the long route, because it makes people begin to understand, especially the roots. Like you said, it was mostly going to start for art, because for myself personally, I've got my hands on the testing also of a Moringo. You can see by the design of it, it was, you said it's picture oriented, but again, as you can see, maybe like you said, it was too interesting. Things might change as it goes. So it's something really interesting to hear that it was something about art at first. Then you built upon it, you restructured things, you went back to the drawing board, you came up with a better idea. Another key thing on Moringo's advertising is Web3. Web3. And I think a lot of people, especially the technical people, I think they've got a bad taste in their mouth with the instance of Web3 form. You know what has happened with crypto, NFTs, especially big words, people will be throwing blockchain, you know, people are all like, ah, then they hear Moringo Web3, they're like, ah, I don't think this is something I want to be involved with. What can you say to ease their minds so they can easily adapt with Moringo?
So I think that's an interesting take, because looking back at any sort of like significant technology break, you always have the bubble. Like, you know, you have this thing called the bubble. So you saw it first when the internet came out, you know, there was a lot of people that rushed into it, like it was a big hype. And then, you know, over time, it falls off. And but the things with all this amazing technology is that, like, you've seen it now again with AI. You kind of see like a massive, massive hype. You know, it's like a new thing. Everyone rushes to it. And off that, like, whenever there's attention to something, you have the good actors and you also have the bad actors. You know, the bad actors, they think about how can I capitalize off this hype to make money, like, you know, to take advantage of those that, you know, are like coming onto this thing because of the hype. And, you know, those are usually the bad actors. And so you saw with the internet when it first came out, and like you saw with Web3 when it first came out, you know, people were trying to, how could utilizing the hype, going off the hype to kind of, and I'll say people's kind of lack of knowledge of actually what Web3 and the technology, you know, the actual utility and the beauty of the technology, to just kind of, con people and to kind of sell these false kind of narratives. You know, you see all these kind of bad crypto projects, all of these pyramid schemes, all of these sort of negative kind of, and you saw it with NFT projects as well, all of these things which for them it was just a way to kind of scam people and make a quick buck. However, intrinsic to the technology is actually a lot of use. I think it's actually like the nature of the technology serves a massive purpose and advantage, which if utilized properly could solve a lot of the issues that we're having on a day-to-day basis. So I think it's good, and I think we're building at the right time, because this is when after the bubble or the hype has been burst, then you start to see the actual good actors, you know, come into it and actually then build off the utility of, you know, leverage the actual benefits of this technology to build platforms, to build ecosystems, to build projects that actually serve a purpose rather than just going off the hype, so to speak, of these kind of trendy sort of technologies and stuff like that, to build actual meaningful projects. So you saw with the Amazons that, you know, that's what birthed, you know, the initial, you know, social media and the likes of Google. You know, they came after the initial burst of the, you know, internet bubble, and then they built really, really meaningful projects. And so we're hoping that Moringo can now also be like the second, also I say third iteration of like the web, whereby we're capitalizing this really useful technology to build an infrastructure, to build an ecosystem that, like, you know, that serves a massive purpose and actually helps to bring a lot of utility from actually the nature of the technology.
I love how you said they were bad actors when something starts, you know, when it blows up, a lot of people do not yet understand. And there's this saying that humans fear things that they don't understand. And those people who know what's happening tend to take advantage of that fear and cultivate in a way that people might engage in that. I did my bit of my own research when I was learning about NFTs at the start. The idea of NFTs was such a revolutionary idea, because it was more like this. From what I read was that they were saying that we had a way of telling the original Mona Lisa from a fake one and all these other big pieces. But there was no way of saying which is the original digital art, for especially the digital area where we now had a lot of digital artists. So the problem became like, how do we do that? That's when the idea of NFT came. Like, as an artist, you draw, you do your digital art, you put it on the blockchain, it gets its unique identity, that whenever people can always say, this is the original. And if someone takes a screenshot or whatever, copies, people will be able to tell that this is the original and this is the fake. But as always, like you said, babe actors come in, they disrupt the entire thing and disrupt the whole thing for good, for benefiting a lot of people. Like the artists could have benefited so much more, like in terms of getting money for their art. But anyway, I think we've reached that stage where a lot of things have come down and people have begun to study these things and have begun to understand and see their potential. So another key thing of Maringo, I've noticed the referral program. How do you think you are going to implement it in a way that does not seem like it's deteriorating? Because I feel like a lot of people coming off a lot of Ponzi schemes or these pyramid schemes, they usually see anything with referral, they feel like, what's going on? I don't trust this a bit. How do you implement that program in a way that people will be like, okay, this is how it benefits me and how you guys also make your money? I think that's another thing people like to understand, like how does both sides make money in a way that they feel comfortable, like, oh, during this, I make my cut, they make their cut there, and that's how the system will keep on running.
So to answer that question, I'll let you in on a bit of like marketing metric. So for social media platforms such as this, you talk about something like the cost of customer acquisition. So the cost of user customer acquisition, which is how much money is it gonna take to bring in like a user or customer into your application or your platform, etc. So with something such as this, like a social media platform, you kind of want something with along the range of, so what we're going, at least for our very aggressive initial referral campaign, is a 1-to-1 ratio. So that's $1 for every user brought into the app. So, you know, if you think about us, the cost of us running ad spend or like on Google or like do like Instagram campaign, you know, how much they charge for impressions and everything, and how much it would take to convert those impressions into users and everything. So we're trying to circumvent all of that. And we're just giving the user the ability to actually, rather than pay Instagram a whole bunch of money, rather than pay Google a whole bunch of money to do like run ad campaigns or, you know, et cetera on there, we're just going straight to our users and saying, look, you know, we're a new platform, a platform that is literally trying to give like change the perspective of build an ecosystem that is for the users. And so how it works is we've budgeted £100,000 for this campaign. So if you think of it as per like, our goal is to acquire first 100,000 users with this campaign, essentially. So it's not a pyramid scheme. I know that obviously the continent has had quite a few of these pyramids, Ponzi schemes that, you know, a lot of people can go off and like have negative opinions about, but it's very simple, essentially. So if you think of it as like a $1 to 1 user ratio, we would very easily have no problem paying out every user, like for, you know, everyone that participates in this referral campaign up to our first 100,000 users. So we're aiming to look to, you know, to keep this campaign going for at least either for when we first hit our 100,000 users or until the end of the 3 months. So that there's no, and I think there's no kind of, it's very simply put, there's no kind of dodgy or false sense of, you know, how we're planning on doing. It's not a pyramid scheme. It's just very much strictly marketing kind of, you know, like very like one, like simple metrics essentially for how we're choosing to pay out our users as opposed to like a massive organization for advertising. So that's the idea, and you know, going behind it essentially.
Okay, I think that clarifies a lot of people's misconceptions of it. Because like you said, it's more like you said, it's marketing oriented. So you just put a budget aside. You are giving, usually with this pyramid scheme, I have to first give you some money. But in this case, I'm giving your application a try. We build it together and we see, as the application grows, I also benefit from it growing. So I want to see it succeed. So it's, you know, it's a win-win situation from what I'm seeing. Then we move on to Maringo itself. What is Maringo's goal, like, you know how Instagram is photos these days, there's also some reels. I think a great example of a social media the current moment is YouTube. It's long form content. We got Twitter with its tweets. What does Maringo's idea of a social media is to it, to you guys?
So in a very interesting way, we want to we want our users to tell that story, to be very honest with you. So we're going for what we think is quite a popular kind of media format now, which is like videos and, you know, and short form videos, and also like photos, a photo sharing platform. So that's kind of foundation that we're starting Moringa off as. So we're going to introduce more elements to it soon, you know, the Moringa moments, which is kind of like letting users kind of share statuses of their day, you know, daily snapshots, kind of like stories. And then we're obviously going to build in like a live streaming kind of product as well within our platform. So over time, our goal is to kind of, you know, we call ourselves a social five. So you know, we're going to build like a range of social media products, but also on the back of that, we want to start integrating and combining this whole finance fintech elements to our platform, letting users to be able to send and receive payments to kind of utilize our, you know, to earn, you know, through our, you know, by leveraging, you know, the monetization features on our platform to actually be able to facilitate, you know, essentially payment to, you know, to buy and sell stuff, banking, you know, we're going to integrate some banking aspects of into Moringa as well. So long term of Moringa is, I don't know if you're familiar with, like, we try and brand ourselves as a super app, which is kind of like one app where you can kind of achieve, you know, majority of your day-to-day needs rather than switching from like different apps application. But we're particularly trying to target the African population, the African market, because we believe that, like, for a very long time, you know, the African continent, like, we tend to rely on like applications that weren't really African. So like, you know, judging by, I think, trying to niche down into that market, I think we can really build, we can specifically target and build a product that aims to solve the problems of our market, as opposed to trying to go for a general market kind of strategy. But we're trying to, you know, hone in down, really prioritize that market as our base.
I like the way you said we're building a super app, your all-in-one application. I think that's, a lot of people can get gravitated to that, because I think we're all tired of this, where you got your YouTube, you got your TikTok, Snapchat, WhatsApp, Threads, Twitter. There's a picture which is sending, yeah, which is making me laugh. The Threads versus Twitter and Moringa is just, they chilling. It's very funny. It's a very funny picture. It's really funny. So I really like the idea you guys are moving with, like, just, you know, building it as a super app, and you guys are not really worried about that international market. You're more like, our audience is Africa. We build our base around Africa. Of course, it's going to be open to anyone to later join, but you, yeah, guys, your main focus is Africa. So Moringa is a wonderful platform. The key question now, the name. Moringa, where did it come from? What are the roots of that name?
So in its nature, actually, I'm sure a lot of, and it's actually coming to my day, to my attention, that the origin of the name actually stems from Swahili. Like I told you, I spent quite a lot of time in Kenya, and I think that influenced. So Moringa actually means, translate, I think, if in the limited way that I kind of used to speak Swahili, it translates to pride. And I think that kind of tells the story of what, you know, of the journey and the, you know, the transition of Moringa has, and what it actually aims to be as like an application. You know, we're telling a story of, like, we want users to take pride in kind of in that social experience, take pride in themselves, take pride in the continent, whatever kind of that means to the users. So that's the story, that's the revelation that we want to sell to our users, our customers, and the likes of. We want people to have pride in this application, because essentially we're building a platform, and even as part of the beta testers, like, you get to showcase your own input, and so we want people to take pride in this app, because we're not looking at it as like a company that owns the app, rather than like all the users in the app has a stake and has a share within this app, and so they want, you know, it's like they own a percentage of this platform. So we want users to have pride in what we're building, and to be part of that story with us as well. So that was kind of the idea, and, you know, that I really liked the name, and I think I felt it was very befitting of kind of what we're trying to build. So, you know, all those things combined, is kind of why we went for that name. So I think it's very compelling name, and it's very catchy. And I think it's really, really sells the idea of the product we're trying to build.
What a wonderful name. That is Moringa, pride. And I feel like this is where Africa needs to go. This is where we're actually heading. I see a lot of things in Africa happening. We've got you guys with your social media app, people with their game studios. so many animated studios now. Animation is coming from Africa, and I feel like people have decided it's like, okay, it's good to consume, but it's also good to create so other people can consume us, that they can know us, not just knowing us from textbook. Let us show them what we want them to see. And I'm really proud of what you guys and your team are doing. I feel like your marketing is fantastic. I'm seeing you guys engaging. Congratulations on being one of the sponsors on the women's function, which is coming up soon. It's really a milestone. I think that will expose you to a larger place. And I just feel like Maringo is going places. It's all with people sharing that. And I feel like the tactic you chose, the word of mouth, is always the best. The moment I say to someone, try out Maringo, it's better than them seeing an ad on their TikTok or whatever. It's always better with the word of mouth. I want to ask you something. This is a bit more personal. As you said, you have someone who's very driven for the improvement of Africa. In your own aspect, what are your some things about creating? What can you influence people, like give advice to people who also want to start creating things that also make an impact on a global scale, but they also want to start from home? Like, you know, they want to make on Africa, then they go global. What advice would you give people in the same line as you, same mindset, not exactly social media, but they're doing their own things?
So I think the very first thing to start is start locally. Because if you look at any of these massive, massive multinational companies, look at Facebook. Like, Facebook started as a thing for universities. You know, you wanted to create a platform for people within universities to communicate with one another. Amazon started as a book store. Do you understand? Even Discord started for just gamers, and you know, look at how it progressed to, you know, all the platform did. So I think oftentimes, you know, a lot of people, I think we like to, you know, future scope and think that, oh yeah, you know, trying to start, okay, how can I make this global entity? But you know, it's just about solving like a little problem, because more often than not, you tend to find that, you know, if it's a problem that's so significant, you know, even if it's locally, a lot of people will be experiencing that, like, in different kind of communities as well. So if you solve a problem locally, chances are in a different community they're also probably having the same kind of problems, and just like that, that's kind of how your product, you know, as you scale, obviously you kind of adapt it to solve more and more people's problems. And you know, just off that basis, you tend to find it that kind of thing scales, and it's really, before you know it, it's like it's multinational, it's continental, and then it becomes international, it becomes a global product, a global phenomenon. So yeah, I think if I would say any kind of advice is just start by solving problems locally, because I wouldn't advise anyone to kind of imagine problems that, you know, that doesn't exist. But don't build a product for the sake of a product, but rather build solutions to a problem that exists, even though local problems. And then obviously as that scales, so does your product.
I think you said it all. I don't think you could have said it any better than that. Start small, solve a problem that people personally, I think, like you said, it started off as your personal problem, but of course for everyone, you, there's like almost a million people who are similar to you who also have the same problem, and you start from there. As time goes by, as you build upon that problem and solve that issue, things are bound to happen. You're bound to meet with people you connect with, and it becomes just a domino effect. It just keeps on getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So, Louis, exactly. I would like to say thank you for that. You have explained Maringo. We wish you the best in terms of getting the outreach there. And I can see people, the numbers are growing. We're now in 400. We're close to 500 now in the testers.
Yeah.
And the goal of 100,000 does not seem that far away. At the speed we're moving it, we're bound to reach it by end of year. We'll be there. I think one of the last questions people would want to know is just, what can we expect from the future from Maringo and you personally? What's happening? Any plans? What can people expect as you roll out?
So we will probably hopefully look to push now our first earlier to really come out with it, because we're going through this beta testing. We have certain milestones and metrics we want to use, not just for the users, but also to get our app to a certain quality where we can then release it to public early access. So like I said, I think a big part of Maringo and shaping up Maringo is very reliant on the community. Because we really want to get that early stage feedback from the people to help refine our app, help develop it, help you know, like build it and scale it a bit better. So you know, I really I urge anyone and everyone to kind of, who's interested or we wanted to find out more to really, reach out to the team, reach out to me to get access to the app so we can really have you participate and also be part of that story that we're trying to build, because that is essentially the idea, that's kind of the goal. The goal is to really build an app that is for the people and by the people. So that's kind of what you can, you should be. In terms of time frame, we're looking to, pushing out our early access probably before the end of the year, hopefully. With more exciting stuff planned. Talk about, going back to the reference of the art stuff I mentioned. Ring wanting to be an art platform. Essentially, we'll still be capitalizing on those routes again. With our we're looking to really launch massive schemes and foundations to really help go locally. And you can already see we started on this, already within Nigeria. But we're hoping to scale out to Kenya, to South Africa, and branch out to other African countries massively. But we want to really become big in our community outreach program, sponsoring, collaborating with different communities, local communities, putting on events, local events as well, really upscaling and doing those of like social activism as well within our community. So that's kind of our plan. So it's more than just an app, we're really trying to make significant impact within the communities that, of our users and where people will be using our app as well. So that's our goal and our ambition, and hopefully, through the help and support of, the community backing us as well, we'll be able to achieve that and continue growing from strength to strength. So yeah.
The road is ahead. The roadmap has been set. The vision is clear. You cannot have sounded of better more than this. The community will always support, will always push it wherever we are. Maringo, our pride in Africa, will continue to push that. So now, can you just give people your social media platforms, where they can find you, where they can find about Maringo, and how the testers in Maringo can also share that to other people?
Yeah, so obviously I'm a personal account. You can find me on LinkedIn, Louis Akatenga. I'm available on Twitter as well. I'm trying to become available on Twitter. It's not really a platform that I use a lot, but you can also find me on Twitter, Instagram. Obviously, yeah, that's more personal, but feel free to connect with me on there. But more importantly, obviously, make sure to check out and follow the Moringa accounts. We're available on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram. We have a Telegram channel as well. And ultimately, you can check out our website. But more importantly, to be part of our community, you find out from our, to join our to get access to the beta testing. I think one of the simplest ways either to be part of our Telegram and then obviously get the appropriate links. But we'll be sharing what we're trying to do actually subsequently in the next week is to make that process to get access to our beta testing a lot easier. So, right now it's a bit cryptic and not a lot of people are able to kind of find out where to get access to our beta testing. But we're trying to simplify that because we'll start putting the app on the App Store and Play Store, but with restricted access. So, you still need to be part of our community or get that private link to download to to get access to the app. So, but like essentially, our goal is to make it simpler for users to be able to get access to a beta testing and really start playing around the app, get familiar with it, and give it, more importantly, give us feedback. Because I think the most important thing is really to get that feedback as we're building and iterating over this process. And hey, like take part in our referral and affiliate campaign. That's a good way to start earning, to make to capitalize on our platform to really earn money if you're interested in that sort of thing as well. So it's open to anyone at the moment. So only requirement is, hopefully you kind of you can patronize us and follow and share, be part of our story essentially. So yeah, so that's it. Thank you so much for having me. And I think it's really humbling that you reached out to me to participate and take part in your podcast. So I look forward to hopefully get invited soon again. And I look forward to seeing your journey as well progress. We can keep in touch and see how things go.
Thank you so much about that. It was always a pleasure of mine. I saw the application. I fell in love with it. I wanted to get more information about it. I fought really hard to get into the beta testing program. That's how much I really want to see these applications succeed. Once again, Louis, thank you for being on the podcast. Thank you for taking out of your busy schedule as running this hit, but thank you for taking your time to be with us.
Thank you. The pleasure's all mine. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Africa's Blank Canvas Podcast, so you're always up to date with the latest news. Don't forget to share. That's the only way we grow.